does it mean to be a Muslim in Britain today? If the media is anything to go by, it has something to do with mosques, community leaders, whether or not you wear a veil, and your views on extremists. But as all our lives become increasingly entwined with our online presence, British Islam has evolved into a multidimensional cultural identity that goes well beyond the confines of the mosque, entering a world of memes and influencers, and I hope I said that correctly, Muslim dating apps, and alt-right Islamophobes. Hussein Kesvani reveals how a new generation of young Muslims who have grown up with the internet are using social media to determine their religious identity on their own terms, something that could change the course of British Islam forever. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from the UK, author of Follow Me, Aki, Hussein Kesvani himself. Good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, this Monday morning. It's an interesting one, isn't it? The way that you can identify your cultural identity via the internet and via social media.
Yeah, I think it's something that we're all doing. And when I was writing this, I was thinking a lot about the 2016 election and politics and how this conversation around internet culture and how that was affecting people's political choices and their political identities was so profound. And it was almost taken as a given that the internet was always going to be this place where your political expression would be intertwined. And my thinking was I was curious as to why religious identity wasn't given that same kind of treatment.
So what is the current, without trying to sound sort of, I don't know what I'm talking about, but what is the current state then of, we're talking about memes and influencers, and I hadn't really thought about having sort of memes and influencers, and Muslim dating apps, that sort of thing. I mean, there's a whole, as there is in every aspect of British Muslim life, a whole subculture that perhaps those in, who are white and Christian don't actually know about.
Yeah, no, it's not an ignorant question at all. And actually, it's something that even when I was kind of going into this project, even I sort of underestimated how much I knew about this kind of world that I had grown up in. Partly because the internet is such a kind of fast-changing piece of technology that just as you kind of get to grips with one platform or one tool, a new one comes out. So there were definitely parts of the thing when I was writing where I felt very old. But to kind of answer your question about subcultural spaces, I think that in some ways, you have a generation of young Muslims who are very devout in their faith for whatever reason. Some of, and for each reason, each story that I tell, their kind of relationship with faith is inherently different. So for some of these Muslims, they want to kind of translate their living kind of as Islamic a life as possible, as true to the Quran as possible. They want to translate that to the digital space because for them, the digital world is just as real as their material lived experience. So they end up kind of having to form their own communities and use their own tools, which can abide by Islamic halal principles while also being able to browse the internet. The other kind of way that I saw things was that the internet acted as this way, almost as this subverting space where Muslims who felt that they weren't really allowed to participate in particular aspects of material life, maybe because of their religious identity, but maybe also because of their cultural identity, maybe not feeling as if they kind of belong in a physical way, they can participate in particular aspects of politics and pop culture online using using personas that they've created themselves or joining communities that they've formed themselves.
I mean, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because, we're looking at people who are sort of second, third, fourth generation from people who arrived perhaps in the UK. The British Muslim experience has obviously changed over the past, it would have changed without the internet in the past 30 years. Yeah. But I should imagine that, with the arrival of an internet space, of a platform, it has completely revolutionized it.
Yeah. And part of that is because, most of the people that I speak to in the book they identify as British Muslims or Muslims whose kind of first country is Britain. So, but they also have grown up at a time when a post-terror attack time in the time of ISIS and stuff where And this isn't just in Britain, but this is across Europe as well, where like the question of identity and what does it mean to be a Muslim living in Europe, being a European citizen, but not kind of feeling as if they're getting the benefits of being a European citizen. You know, how do they kind of reconcile aspects of their faith with that aspect of citizenship? Now, I think for a long time, there was this preconception that Muslims were like choosing Islam over their kind of national faith or national identity, and that this was where kind of the conflict was. And then what I was trying to show was that online Muslims are kind of having a lot more complicated conversations where, yes, they're expressing some dissatisfaction with the countries they've grown up in because they're citizens, and like every citizen does that. But they're also expressing dissatisfactions with aspects of their faith communities or even aspects of their faith themselves. And in the material world, it's really difficult to be able to kind of like tell those stories with nuances, because I guess they feel like they, you know, they're always going to be made to choose between sides. But online, they can kind of express those nuances themselves. And they can say that there are aspects of like my country that I really love and I'll kind of fight for, and that I really love feeling like British or French or Dutch. And they'll also say that I'm a very proud Muslim, but that doesn't mean I'm not kind of dissatisfied with the way that my local mosque is run or the way that my community is run, or even aspects of faith that I find to be sexist or misogynistic or racist.
I mean, don't you as a Muslim male yourself get somewhat fed up with the stereotyping that if you are a Muslim and you're going online, then therefore you must be engaging in illegal activity? That almost seems to be the narrative that we're given.
Yeah, and actually that was like partly why I wanted to write this, because I mean I wrote this as the perspective of a reporter. I think that I'm now kind of I'm not young enough to kind of have that suspicion, though in the past that definitely was the case. You know, but for me, I kind of wanted to kind of portray a different and more complicated story about human beings. Like, I wanted to kind of say that, you know, all the Muslims that feature in my story or in throughout the stories in the book, they all have very complicated aspect, you know, complicated relationships with their faith and their country and their identity, but in the same way that everyone else does. And you were kind of saying at the beginning about like, is the British Muslim experience like online inherently different from like Christians? Well, in one aspect, yes, in terms of how they interact with the online world. But in terms of kind of being a religious person, I feel like part of being a religious person is like dealing with conflicts all the time. Like, I come from a practicing family and I am a practicing Muslim, and my entire like religious identity has been rooted in kind of reconciling conflict and trying to figure out where those kind of, how I can kind of be true to myself as an individual while also maintaining the aspects of faith that I care about and maintaining those familial and community aspects of my religious identity that I care about too. And this is just like a very human thing. And, you know, I don't know, like, you know, part of me writing this book was just to kind of show that, yeah, Muslims go through those things too. And it's not like this really easy binary that has guided so much policy in both Britain and the continent for at least like a good decade.
When you look at, and again, shoot me down if I'm using broad strokes here, but when you look at the perception that we have of Muslim communities, with the mosque being central, and you've said yourself, you're practically, and that is the hub of the community. Well, obviously, with an online community, that brings in influences from the outside, as it were. How are the mosques, how are religious leaders, how do they view the internet? I know the Christian Church has had some problems with how they, I mean, they've only just introduced an app so you can meet other Christians in your area, but I mean, how have the imams, how have the leaders in the mosque looked at, or how did you find them in your research?
Sure, I don't like want to generalize too much, just because I didn't really visit a lot of mosques per se when I was doing this, and that was very deliberate, because the thing that I say is that mosques are always going to be important. So I think in Christian spaces, I think there is a concern in some areas where people are either like turning away from the church completely, or they're kind of finding the internet or online community, Christian communities, being like an alternative to the community church. I don't think that in the Islamic space is very much like that, because Islam is such a physical religion in terms of how you pray and how you worship. Mosques are always going to be really important anyway. So the real question is kind of like that kind of community leaders and imams are facing is, how do we engage young people? How do we kind of engage young people to actually care about these mosques that their parents built and funded? How do we make them care about like the big kind of big, broad theological, moral, ethical issues? And more importantly, how do we make sure that they engage with us rather than people online who are very flashy, who are very influential, but may not be teaching our children or teaching the children of this community a type of Islam that we believe is the right one? And I think in some aspects, mosques have kind of started doing like live streaming so that people can kind of tune in, even if they're away. They've started to like make YouTube channels where the imam is kind of given lessons. Some of them open up like Instagram and Snapchat accounts so that they can do the same thing. Mm. I think they're trying to kind of be more online. They're trying to kind of put more resources online. They're also trying to kind of like combat particular aspects of internet culture, which they feel like might be, and this is particularly the case in like a post kind of 7/7 post terrorist attack world, where so groups like Imams Online, who I profile in the first chapter of the book, they're an organization who train imams to be like internet literate. And one of the things that they do is put out videos once every couple of months, which takes on like particular arguments that they believe are kind of very extreme in their nature. So they have done like campaigns where they've kind of dissected every kind of justification that Islamic scholars that support ISIS make. And they've kind of put that out, and that went viral over Facebook and YouTube and everything. So I think they've been trying to do that, and they're going to continue doing that. And I think there is this kind of broad awareness, especially now, and I hope that if they read my book, they'll kind of take this on more, that not only do they need to be putting more resources online than they do, but they also need to be thinking about smarter ways in which they can engage young people. So they also need to think about what platforms are going to be influential to put our messages out before it's too late.
I mean, looking at engaging young people, you talk to it, you use that dread word influencer, and I'm still, trying to work because I'm being over 50. I'm like, yeah, okay, fine. We are bombarded by influencers who are, who take pictures of themselves at this hotel with that handbag, getting into this car. I mean, is there a version of that, or is it, am I being entirely secular here?
No, I mean, like, there are like Muslim influencers. I talk about some of it in the book, actually. But these influencers aren't people who are actually, in some cases they are. So you have like fashion and beauty influencers who will do the classic influencer stuff. So, they'll take pictures, you'll do like videos doing like makeup hauls, or they'll go to like, nice restaurants and take kind of pictures of themselves very glammed up and put it on their Instagram feed. And that will be a way of advertising. So for them, like these classic influencers, they're reaching to like a young, largely like millennial Gen Z Muslim audience, but in a largely secular way. For them, the message is like, you can still be a practicing Muslim, but enjoy all that like life has to offer. And you don't have to exclude yourself just because, influencer culture by and large is secular. But then you also have this other generation of influencers who are religious influencers. So for them, their intention isn't to get you to buy products, but it's to get you to kind of be a more practicing Muslim, or to kind of follow a particular form of Islam, which tends to be like quite conservative or quite, almost like Salafi in nature, like a conservative branch of Islam. So for them, like their kind of version of influence is taking pictures outside of mosques, for example, or taking pictures of them like praying, giving reminders on like Instagram stories of like when you need to pray. They do kind of big events where they talk to like lots of young people. So they'll kind of, say that, oh, I'm going to be in London or I'll be in like London or Paris or Berlin at this time. And what you'll find is within a few hours, you'll have like a crowd of people come to meet them. So they'll do the classic influencer stuff, but their intention is very different. They're not trying to get you to buy a product. They're not trying to like promote themselves. They're trying to kind of they're basically trying to proselytize.
Yeah. I mean, that sort of thing was set off again in the conservative media, sends off all sorts of alarm bells, isn't it, when you have that sort of thing happening?
Yes. Yeah. But they also know that. So like one interesting thing to note is that in many ways, a lot of Muslim influencers provoking the conservative media is also a way of like amplifying their stature, right? So, they almost like, so for some of them, like, they almost feed off like the animosity that comes with like being a proselytizing influencer. So I found that aspect like really interesting, just like the way that they're kind of taking, I guess like they're taking kind of, Islamophobia and using it almost to their advantage.
Also, you look at LGBTQ forums. I mean, the internet can be a good space, an anonymous space. How did you find that the Muslim experience was, the British Muslim experience was in those forums?
Yeah, I mean, I wish that I could have reported more because there were a lot of like things that I did with LGBTQ spaces that I just wasn't allowed. Like, I went in on the condition of not being like reporting or exposing names. So. A lot of the LGBT stuff is like a very kind of general overview. What I found interesting about the LGBT, because one of the stories that I do tell in the book is when I hung out with a young gay Muslim who was going to his first Pride festival for the first time, and he had moved home, and like this was the first time that he was actually like coming out as a gay person, and like that kind of emotional toll that took on him, because even though he had like reconciled the idea that you can be gay and Muslim and that he can be a religious practicing Muslim while also being true to his sexuality, there was also this kind of guilt that came with like, my family don't know, am I betraying my family, am I betraying my family's version of Islam by kind of doing this, should I just like be gay and keep it private, which is what a lot of like gay Muslims do, or a good amount of like gay Muslims like do anyway. So what I found was really interesting was that the way that he used his online community, which was a community called Greenbird, it was a group designed for young Muslims who were just about to come out and they needed kind of like help and support. The way that he used that to kind of, every time he had these doubts, he would go onto this group and be like, I'm having doubts again, or I'm having like worries again, or I'm having concerns, or I feel really guilty. And this group of people would be like, you just need to remember that it is okay to be you. Like, it's okay to be gay and Muslim. And like, there's a long history of it. And just because you didn't hear about it doesn't mean it's true. And like, you can still be true to yourself. Like, it was consistent reinforcement. And it was this consistent network of people that, even though he had never met in real life before, were almost like his kind of family. Like, whenever he had these kind of concerns and difficulties, he wouldn't go speak to his parents. He would go speak to them, and they would kind of give him the kind of responses that I guess you would expect a parent to. So seeing that kind of like intimate relationship between him and this online group, but in like a real world setting, and seeing how the words that came from that online space were affecting him in real time in that material world, in the room that he was like getting like set up, you know, getting his like parade stuff set up in, that was like a really heartwarming experience. And it was also just a really kind of like, it really got to the heart of what I was trying to do, which was like how these people use online culture to like be better Muslims in their lived real worlds.
Also, you looked at the world of dating apps, and that made me raise an eyebrow. That must have been an interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's interesting for lots of people. For me, like having grown up in this, like in the space, like I have loads of friends who are on Muslim dating apps, and like it's like an almost like very, it's a very normal experience. You know, for them. So I knew that if I was going to do this book, like dating, and also bearing in mind that Islam is also a religion where marriage is really important. So like dating is always going to be this big thing. And it was interesting because for lots of kind of Muslim communities living in the West, and I guess also in the Middle East now as well, having kind of like a functional dating app like Muzmatch, the thing that you mentioned in the introduction, is such a new thing, because for so long, like the online dating world for Muslims was really bland, let's just put it that way. Like the websites that you were using weren't particularly that functional. They were easily like exploitative. There were lots of more people who really hated going on there. It was almost like a running joke, like the dead Muslim dating websites. Whereas with the app, now that like the app kind of almost operates in the same way as like Tinder, like it's really easy to use, but also it provides tools which allow young Muslims to kind of empower themselves by identifying what kind of Muslim they are, like kind of being very honest with what kind of Muslim they are, and in a non-judgmental space where, for example, if you say, I'm a Muslim, but I drink alcohol, the app won't like kick you out. It won't exclude you, but it will basically say, here is like a bunch of people who are completely okay with you drinking alcohol if you want to. You know, and that, like, even though that's such a small tweak, it's such a revolutionary thing in Muslim culture where, like, for so long, if you were wanting to get married, like, you or your parents would have to, like, kind of butter yourself up or even lie about, like, what your habits are. You know, that created very toxic relationships. And what Muzmatch is really trying to do is detoxify that kind of setting, which form those toxic relationships. So the stories that I tell in the book are really funny, just because dating, I think writing about dating itself is a very funny thing to do. Dating is very awkward and like weird and stuff. But I didn't want to like get away from the fact that this is a really revolutionary piece of technology, which is really changing the way that Muslims are kind of seeing themselves as people capable of like romance and love and affection, and also going for what kind of life that they want to.
You're surprised. I mean, you obviously had some ideas about what the scene was like out there online. Were you surprised by some of the things that you saw? Were you amused, yeah, especially with the dating apps? And the, I mean, is there a humor? Because it's very easy to say it's all very dark out there, and
And I didn't want to like say that it was really dark. Like, there are definitely dark stories in there, which is just inevitable when you write about the internet anyway. But there was so much like really fun stuff. Like, one of the most important stories was about like a young woman who got an abortion via a friend that she met on Tumblr. Like, that was a really serious and important story to tell, because I wanted to tell the story both of like how female friendships kind of operate online, but also the kind of like moral complexities of birth control in like particular aspects of Islamic culture, or like British Muslim culture. But then there were other like really funny stories too. So like one of the most funny stories that I kind of remember was when I was hanging out with an ex-Muslim called Amir, who again, like, he hadn't told his parents that he had left Islam. So the first time he was able to do this was when he met like other ex-Muslim friends at university, and they had this ritual where when someone kind of wanted to declare their exit from Islam, they would eat like a pork sandwich, like a pork cutlet sandwich. Right. So I went to go hang out with him in the pub while he ate this pork sandwich. And like, the whole experience was very surreal, because it felt like it was almost like a frat party, or like someone kind of getting exclusive membership into a club, which I guess it almost was. So like, he takes like two bites of the pork sandwich, and all of a sudden, because this is a very kind of fatty meat that he's never had before, and a very salty meat that he's never had before, like suddenly he feels very sick. And I'm interviewing him while he's like outside the pub, like throwing up. And I was kind of thinking to myself during this time, but like, this is a very surreal like experience I'm having right now. And one that like, I hope I get to tell on radio one day. So I'm so glad that I got to do it today. And I think, I don't know, there's like lots of stories like that. And I think, I don't know, I've kind of grown up kind of writing, like doing like gonzo journalism and trying to kind of find humor in quite dark things. So I try to find the humor in a lot of stuff, and I hope that's sort of like shown in the book.
So we revealed you as the British Muslim version of Hunter S. Thompson, then, have we, Hussein? Is that your...
I wish I was good as writing as him. Maybe one day.
The book is called Follow Me, Ahi. It's out now. It's published. Who's publishing it at the moment?
Hearst in the UK and Oxford University Press in North America.
What's the reaction been like then from both the online and the more conservative community?
So I think like general. So I've only really had feedback from like online Muslims right now, who have all kind of been very happy with it. So I think they've kind of found that like been very happy that it's told a different story about Muslims rather than one that's kind of rooted in extremism. And I think for a lot of Muslims who have grown up in the online space, this is the first time that they've seen that, oh, this is a type of experience that I went through and like I can relate to, which is really what I set out to do. My dad has kind of given it to a lot of people in our community, which are conservative, like quite conservative in their nature, and also a bit older. So I'm waiting for them to finish, and then I'll look forward to hearing what they say.
We shall be following your Twitter feeds then with gusto. What if people want to find out more about you, Hussein? Obviously, you're on Twitter and you're on the social media.
Yes, so my Twitter account is at HKezvani, just my first initial and my last name. And you can also find me on Instagram at HKezvani as well.
The book is called Follow Me, Ahi. It's out now on Hearst Publication. It's by Hussein Kezvani. Only that begs the question, what are you up to next?
I'm taking a couple of months off to sleep, and then and then I'm going to start working on something else, hopefully.
The book is called Follow Me, Ahi. It's by Hussein Kezvani. Hussein, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.